Thanks to Audible for supporting Current Geek. For a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial, go to audible.com/currentgeek or text Current Geek to 500-500.
My name is Walter Hartwell White. I live at 308 Negra Arroyo Lane, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87104. To all law enforcement entities, this is not an admission of guilt. I am speaking to my family now. Skylar, you are the love of my life. I hope you know that. Walter Jr., you're my big man. There are going to be some things that you'll come to learn about me in the next few days. I just want you to know that no matter how it may look, I only had you in my heart.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, and this is the Autopilot Edition. A chance for you to go back and watch the pilot episode of an old classic geeky TV show and talk about how it differed from the series it became and what we remember about that series in general. I'm Scott Johnson, he's Tom Merritt, and this week we're talking about the show Breaking Bad. Breaking
Bad. So glad you didn't read that the way I wrote it.
Oh yeah, it still has Lost there, but yeah, we already did Lost. Tom Merritt, good morning, or afternoon, hello, hi, good evening.
Good day, Scott. After that long intro, that's all the time we have, everyone.
It's a long one, it's like 48 seconds of that, but I'd love to.
No, man, it's compelling, and it is a great example of why Breaking Bad's pilot episode is probably one of the greatest pilots I've ever seen. Like, it's a self-contained movie with amazing performances, a beginning, middle, and end, and yet still sets you up for an ongoing series.
Were you as surprised again as I was how much I forgot a lot of what happened?
Oh my gosh. So the biggest thing that I forgot or probably never noticed, because I don't think I ever went back and rewatched it. I could be wrong about that, but for instance, we had already done Lost on autopilot.
Right.
Scott and I forgot. But what jumped out at me is, first of all, I forgot he worked at the car wash from episode one.
Yeah.
That was not something that was introduced later. And of course, the car wash plays a big part in Walter White and Heisenberg's future. Yep. But also, he's rolling a drum that looks just like the drum that will be full of the dangerous chemicals later. And it like gets kind of stuck on the metal door in the floor. That is the entryway to their secret lab, you know, much later in the series.
Yeah, lots of little things like that. And also lots of foreshadowing and lots of metaphors.
Yeah, way more than I realized.
Yeah, I don't remember any of that stuff. Like that, to me, the first episode was full of questions. Like there wasn't really any idea of where this was headed.
Well, yeah, because we didn't know who this guy was, what he was really up to, where he was going, why he was doing this, who Jesse Pinkman was. We only get the barest of hints about the cartel and all of the mess that's going to become, and Fring, and like all of that's just on the periphery.
Yeah, we have no idea, but there's some cool foreshadowing. The one other thing I was going into this expecting was to see what I thought was the AMC version of this. I don't think the AMC version had the topless lady or all the F-bomb uses. I think Netflix may have an uncut version of this thing, and I couldn't find anything to sort of support the change or to say, oh yeah,
I didn't find anything on that either. So you know, send us an email if you know. I suspect there was an international cut of Breaking Bad, and then there was an edited for cable TV cut.
Yeah, there must have been, because I don't remember any of this stuff. In fact, the saucy that I remember it getting was toward the end of the series, when Mike Ehrmantraut utters an F word at a very appropriate moment to utter an F word, I might add. And it seemed like a big deal because it was like, oh, okay, there's your one shot for this season. You can't get any more of those in. This is basic cable after all. How edgy, you know, you're really pushing the envelope. And maybe there's a whole cut of this thing where the entire series is.
You know, it's funny though. When we see the housewife kind of pushing Jesse out the window, or maybe protesting that he's leaving. I don't know.
Yeah.
It struck me like, ooh, I don't, I don't remember if they showed that on TV because she's naked. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I did not notice a single F-bomb.
Oh, really?
I don't dispute that they're in there. Like, they never stuck out to me because I don't know, because I'm watching on Netflix, I guess.
You're immune to the common F-bomb. It's okay, though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Usually that kind of stuff sticks out. Like when they started doing it on The Magicians on Sci-Fi, it really, like, I was like, whoa, they just did that on TV, on real TV, not on demand. Wow. Yeah.
It is weird. It's like that envelope has been nudged a bit this year. But like this, in this particular case, when he got fired from the car wash, or he quit and get fired.
Oh, that's right. He just.
Just lays it on him, and I don't think that was in the original cut. So there's probably some more hunting I could do.
Netflix also kind of took over Breaking Bad internationally, if you recall.
Yeah.
Towards the end, so maybe that's why. You know, I don't know.
Well, I know that there are some people going, Scott, Tom, this show's still like popular consciousness. There's a spinoff called Better Call Saul that's currently running. Like, how are you looking back at a quote unquote classic show like this? And I just like to remind everybody, we're like 10 years on this thing.
January 20th, 2008, up against playoff football, which Vince Gilligan remembers as, you know, they're killing their ratings on the premiere. I did not watch it when it premiered. Did you?
No, I think I want to say I saw this episode some weeks later in a repeat kind of format somewhere on AMC.
Oh, you did? Wow. So that's faster than me. I don't think we started watching Breaking Bad. I want to say we watched it on DVD.
Oh my. Wow.
Like in 2010.
Yeah.
I know we had moved to San Rafael, so it must have been mid 2010. And I think we were still doing Netflix DVDs and got the first season on DVD and then caught up and started watching it on AMC for like season three.
Final season was what, 2013? Was it 12? Something like that. Right?
Six seasons total. We'll get our crack staff on that while you carry on.
Oh, they're a crack staff, all right. Lots of crack going on here.
Not doing meth.
Yeah, no meth for you. But I remember after seeing the first episode being like, dude, this is a weird cut above. And I had heard the name Vince Gilligan before, but I only knew it from X-Files. So I knew that he show ran there for a while, did writing there.
Yeah, so season 5 ended on September 29th, 2013.
Oh, that's right. They had the split season. That's why I say 6, right? Because they had that weird cut in half thing, which I don't love. I hate that now.
Right, because the first half of the season was in July, August 2012.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I hate that. It's so annoying to me. But whatever. Yeah. Game of Thrones does it now. Everybody does it now. So probably nothing to complain about. But didn't this show also weather a brief writer strike, or am I remembering that wrong? Seems like there was some crossover between early in its life, there was a bit of a writer strike, and late in Lost's life, there was a writer strike, and it may have been the same writer strike. I just don't remember for sure. Something like that. But anyway, the point is, I saw this and went, oh man, this is, I don't know what this is, but this feels new. This feels different. This feels like nothing I've seen on TV before. And I was still reeling around the idea that this was the dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
Or the dentist from Seinfeld episodes. It just, Dr. Whatley, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, how is this guy doing this turn? And then I didn't see it. I didn't see it because I think that was right around the time I cut the cord. It was very early cord cutter, I think, compared to the rest of the cord cutter world. And I went a long time without TV. So I didn't really have a way to get Breaking Bad until that first season was done and I could get a DVD copy, or I could buy it on iTunes or Amazon or something, which is what I did. And once that happened, it was like, oh my gosh, I have to get these every day. And for me, it was get it every morning after, because that's how you used to be able to get those. I still do, I guess, with seasons. So that's what I did. And then I never let go after that. And it ended up being, I don't know, one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. But in this viewing, I was reminded that through the entire series and this pilot and everything that came after it, always uncomfortable. Never a show where I could just sit and go, ah. It was always
this is the opposite of Bob's Burgers for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob's Burgers is the one where I'm like, ah, I could just relax and have fun. Right?
Yeah.
This is the opposite. You are not relaxing when you watch Breaking Bad ever.
Everything's on a timer. Everything feels like it's so important. Everybody's going to die.
I mean, just Bryan Cranston. This is the least example of the uncomfortableness. just Bryan Cranston standing in the middle of the road in his underwear is uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable.
Let's forget all of the reasons he's doing that around him, which make it even worse.
Glad you brought that up, because it established a thing that Breaking Bad would start to rely on every new season, and that was to show some cold open footage that had no rhyme or reason and no explanation for it, but all very compelling, and you would have to catch up to that to see what happened. Usually, well, in this particular case, in the pilot, you find out how they got there, and then they sort of finish it out.
Yeah, because it's the pilot, I think they probably felt they had to resolve the pants.
Yeah.
in the first 60 minutes.
Like, who are these guys rolling around in the Winnebago, and why is there somebody with a mask on and the others aren't, and what is this about? Like, that got told right away. But in later seasons and in later episodes, they would do similar stuff, like the pool with the pink stuffed animal in later seasons, season three, I think, two, maybe three. They would drag some of that stuff out for a whole season. And I loved that. I thought it was brilliant and genius and always caught me off guard and never was the thing I thought it was. And just a slice of like awesome TV making going on there.
Well, and you've got the X-Files to thank.
Sure.
For Breaking Bad.
Sure.
Because that's where Vince Gilligan, honed his writing skills. I'm not going to say learned there, but he certainly like got his chops. And one of the episodes he wrote featured Bryan Cranston as a dying anti-Semite who captured Mulder. And because of Cranston's ability to play a loathsome character in an incredibly sympathetic way, Gilligan wanted Cranston. He's like, he's the only guy who can do this. Like, I need somebody that everyone's going to think is awesome and sympathetic at the beginning, and I want to turn him into a drug lord that everyone hates by the end. And Bryan Cranston's the only guy that can keep that going. The studios apparently, according to Wikipedia, wanted Matthew Broderick or John Cusack to do this.
Oh, wow.
And both, thankfully, to my mind, although I love them both, turned it down. Yeah. I can sort of see Cusack.
Yeah, I can too.
He has that kind of ability to turn, and you're not sure if he's good or not. Broderick, though, wow, I mean, he's mischievous to me, not Walter White.
He wouldn't have been a good call, but I could totally see John Cusack working that out. I could see that being a thing.
I can see Cusack working it, but it would have been, I don't know, even though he's not actually younger, it would have felt like a younger character, whereas Walter White, like, he feels 50. Yeah. He really feels 50 all the way through.
Yeah, totally. But also, if your only exposure to him, which was true of me for a while anyway, I'd forgotten about the Seinfeld episodes, was Malcolm in the Middle as this goofball dad.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have picked Bryan Cranston either. Like, that seems like the furthest away. In fact, I was worried about that. I thought, well, is this goofy? Is this like, what is this?
Well, because you probably, even if you saw that X-Files episode, you probably didn't put it together that was him.
No. In fact, all his old guest stuff was unnotable. And maybe that's to his strength. It's not the kind
of
guy.
He's a comedian.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you've known him from before. And the X-Files thing was already kind of a weird turn. But even when he's doing character acting, he just melts into these roles and it becomes so good it's not actually notable. So he needed almost like something like this where he gets full star treatment. He's the, you know, he's the star of the show. He has this really complicated character arc, and that makes him stand out forever now as Walter White. In fact, I'd actually argue, but before that role, he could do anything. After this role, it's a little trickier. He's doing plenty of work, doing lots of stuff, but you always go, "Oh, look.
It's so iconic."
Yeah. It's hard not to. It's not like the Shatner kind of pigeonholing, you know, where cheesy Captain Kirk is all you'll ever be to people because that's kind of your range. Certainly, Walter White the guy plays Walter White. Well, I can't think of his name.
Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston, jeez.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Boy, that just fell out.
Left
of your brain,
my head. Just fell out and laid on the floor there, and you picked it up and shoved it back in. But he's got so much range, but even he almost locked himself into something that I wouldn't say, it's not so much typecasting, but it's so important, such a pinnacle of his career.
Okay, you say that.
Yeah.
You say that, Scott Johnson.
But I do.
What have you seen him in since?
I saw him in HBO documentary about LBJ. I forgot the name of the movie, though. He was good in it, though. But it was, he played
All the
president.
Way?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
I saw him in that where he was a blacklisted writer. Everyone thought he was a communist movie.
Trumbo.
Yeah, Trumbo said Boogler. It's not Boogler, is it? It's Trumbo.
No, it's Trumbo. Bugler, trumpet, trombone. I get it. I get where you're going.
Let me think. That might be it.
So you saw him both of those are very soon after Breaking Bad ends.
Pretty quick.
Breaking Bad ends in 2013. Trumbo's out in 2015. Mm-hmm. All the way's out in 2016.
Yeah.
I never watched Sneaky Pete, which he has a recurring role in, although he is not the main character. He's actually a producer on the show. I did not see The Disaster Artist, which he is apparently in. I do not watch Super Mansion, which he is a voice in.
Mm-hmm. I saw him in the what are they called? The Power Rangers movie. He's the big headed talking robot man.
Right. Hologram. Zordon.
Zordon. Okay. Yeah. He's in that.
The one thing that I can say that I've seen him in recently, and he did not strike me as Walter White, because I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Like, especially right after Breaking Bad was done, I'm like, oh, look, it's Walter White. Yeah. Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. Did you watch the Human Is?
Not yet, but I saw his face in Amazon when I was hanging around in there.
I was worried. I was like, I'm going to think this is Walter White. Blew Walter White out of my brain.
Oh, did good.
And the same way that Walter White blew Malcolm in the Middle out of your brain, he does that again in Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams.
Okay, I'm in then. I'm all in on that. I've been meaning to watch that. Actually, is this your endorsement of Philip K. Dick's Electric Sheep Show?
I wish it was better.
Really? So they didn't
some
quite
good episodes.
Yeah.
It's no Black Mirror though.
That's too bad. I was really hoping it would at least sort of equal it. There's another Stephen King one that's getting worked on by Hulu. Is it?
Yeah. That one's not out yet.
No, I don't think so, but I want to see it.
Yeah, Electric Dreams, I don't know. It takes itself too seriously sometimes. It's got amazing casts. There's, like I said, there's some great episodes. Obviously, it's, you know, Philip K. Dick's content is always loopy and warpy.
Yeah.
It just doesn't quite, I think because they're trying to take Philip K. Dick and adapt, they run into trouble more often than Black Mirror, which is always fresh.
I can see that. So one of the things about the Breaking Bad premiere/pilot that struck me as a thing that they would rely on in a positive way throughout the series, or at least another thing, was Walter White seemingly in a situation where the gig is up. Jig or
right.
Gig? Is it gig or jig? Jig is
the
up.
Jig. I believe the jig is up.
The jig is up. Gig
is up just means your freelance contract is over.
Right. Is it
the
a jig?
Jig is up means stop dancing, you're going to prison. No, I don't know if that's
all right. Who knows? The gif is up. The gif is up. So that moment of like, this is it. I'm in trouble. I'm done. The cops are coming. I'm here in my underwear. There's no way I get out of this. I'm going to make this tape for my wife. This is not going to work out. This happened a lot in that series where it looks like all is for naught, or you're on the last possible stand you can have. And then this is all just going to fall apart and then you're done. And it never quite goes there. Never quite undoes him. And it's amazing that the show can rely on that for so long and still be a compelling aspect of it, if that makes sense the way I'm saying it.
Yeah, and so many themes that are going to carry out through the rest of the series are right there in a way that just kind of reinforces what you're saying. Like, it's amazing that I don't look at this and go, oh yeah, I got so tired of that old trope. Mm-hmm. I more look at the pilot and I'm like, oh wow, they were hammering away on that already.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I will never lie to you. You know, Skyler, I didn't remember this. Skyler says, just be honest with me.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk to me. I'm like, wow, that is like the defining moment of their relationship. And it's right there in the first episode. Like right from the beginning, you can hang a flag on it.
Yeah.
They're saying, hey, he's going to keep lying to her and it's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
The sort of dancing around the fact that Hank is a DEA agent. And he's got to skate real close. They have that little party where he's, you know, mm-hmm. they're looking at the TV and talking about, it's just crazy.
Forgot all about that stuff. In this viewing, it was like, oh yeah, the party and the money and him getting excited about a ride along. I forgot about the ride along. In fact, the entire, how did you meet Jesse for the first time, or at least see Jesse, completely spaced that. I remember all the stuff back at his house, but I didn't remember how they got there. In my memory, Aaron Paul wasn't that great out of the gate. In my memory, it from my first viewing of the even that season, is that Aaron Paul was okay, no big deal. I watch it now and I'm like, no, he's it's all there.
It's just that Pinkman is not somebody you like.
Right.
Because I have the same memory of not really taking to Pinkman as a character yet. And not therefore, you know, Aaron Paul, whatever. And just really loving Pinkman later. It's because Pinkman is super shallow. And through his entanglement with Walter White, his character just deepens and deepens. And Aaron Paul gets to stretch his wings because the character is, and rightly so, one dimensional at this point.
Right.
He's just, you know, he's just a kid who wants to cook some meth and have a good time, you know, like all of us.
Like all of us, really, at the end of the day, that's all I want. That's what I'm doing tonight. I don't know what you're doing after the show, but I'm going to go cook some meth.
I might cook fish instead of meth, but it's basically the same idea.
Listen, the kind of fish Tom cooks, you better have a gas mask is all I'm saying.
Let me just say, salmon-chanted evening.
Very nicely done. Boy, someone called Joe Bazooka. We don't need him anymore. So, one of the oldest bits of trivia about the show is that Jesse Pinkman was not intended to be a series long character. He was originally supposed to die at the end of season one, and start establishing this idea that people will. Oh my gosh, I don't know why my phone thinks I'm talking to him. Here, let me put that over there. Did I say anything that sounded like Siri?
Where did Jesse Pinkman go?
That's so lame. Stupid Siri. Anyway, they decided not to because everybody loved him on set. He made Vince Gilligan very happy with the kind of character he was helping sort of flesh out, and they decided to keep him around. I think much to the show's success, that was the right thing to do. Jesse was
yes and no. Mm. I sometimes feel like Pinkman's character in the later seasons is a little bit adrift. And even if you don't kill him at the end of season one, which I think is a good call, I think they should have killed him.
Oh, interesting. Really.
It just felt like, wait, why is he still around? Why is he the guy that survives?
Yeah.
And I felt like they didn't quite have as clear of an idea of what to do with him as they did with Walter.
Well, what they did do, so you mentioned that he didn't seem very likable at first, and that's right, he's not. He's like the whole world in Walter White's life. Everyone's kind of unlikable. I even think Anna Gunn's character is very unlikable in the beginning because really? She's just too into like which credit card did you use and blah, 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 blah. I don't.
Oh my gosh,
I think this is intentional.
I think she becomes a little more unlikable later, but watching this episode, I was like, oh yeah, no, Skylar's still really nice now. She's just supportive and helpful. Marie was the one that I'm like, whoa, she's like way unlikable.
Yeah.
And I feel like Marie gets more sympathetic later.
So does Hank. Hank, and it takes a while. Yeah, Hank drives me nuts for a while because Hank is like some people I know. and I don't like that kind of alpha male thing that he does.
Yeah, and almost like you protest too much how manly you are.
A little bit, yeah. And by the time, though, we get to some important Hank stuff, complete turnaround on Hank. I think he's one of the great supporting characters in TV history.
Well,
he's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, because he literally gets the legs cut off from
him as a character. He totally does. But reason I'm saying all of this is I think the show pretty definitely made it so that the world Walter inhabited was drab and a place I don't want to be. The kids in that school are terrible. The kids that are giving his son a hard time at the clothing place, I wanted to freaking punch every one of them.
Oh, I love that scene. Ugh. I'd forgotten that was in the pilot.
Yeah.
What a great scene.
I did too. I totally forgot that was in there. So I think they very intentionally made sure that Walter's arc was not one that anyone would envy. Like it just looks like he's in a bad spot, bad position.
Well,
then the cancer.
Dying of cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, like how much worse could it get?
Yeah. And it turns out a lot worse, but we don't know that
oddly,
yet. Oddly. but that really sets up this thing where he becomes the anti-hero and decides to start cooking meth that makes his little pact with Jesse. And then boom, we're on our way. But I think without the drab, miserable place he's in, even though things at home are okay, his son's great, his wife's great, everyone's happy and stuff, but it's also just really average. His birthday starts with the number 50 written out in bacon that doesn't have any fat in it. And that's meant to be drab and kind of, I guess so, cholesterol, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I have a clip
all
here.
All the colors in the shots are muted.
Yeah, very much so. There's this, there's actually, during that scene, and, Walter Jr., who's amazing in this entire series. I loved his character.
Yeah, RJ Mitt.
Yeah, he says this about the bacon.
Eat it. This smells like Band-Aids.
Eat it.
I love the idea. The bad bacon or artificial bacon smells like Band-Aids. I think that's funny.
So evocative.
Yeah, it really is. It works. But he's great, and we would see so much more from these different characters as we went on. But, you know, we didn't know that yet. So when I'd seen the pilot, everyone just kind of rubbed me wrong, and I thought, and not in a bad way, it was compelling, but I just thought, this is a terrible place. Like, what an awful place to be. It's really kind of depressing what he's facing, his existence now. He has to teach, but then part-time work at the car wash for a total jerk who, you know, isn't respecting whatever. And then these kids show
honestly
up.
Honestly, I remember the car wash owner being more of a jerk. I feel like he was just sort of a car wash owner and was like, I need you to help in the garage. And yeah. And then his employee just gives him guff every time. Like, he's like, I'm just trying to run a business here.
It's just like the tone.
Like, he's not particularly likable, but I didn't find him unlikable either. It's right. he's a car wash owner. What do you expect?
To me, it's like they figured out a way to capture or create the tone of what it means for midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Is just everywhere, you know?
And that's why it's better that the car wash owner isn't a jerk.
Right.
Because he's just sort of like, it's just a crappy job. Like, it's not awful enough for you to care about.
Right. And he's got a business. He's trying to run a business. He's trying to make money. He's missing employees. What he's putting Walter through is just what you do because you're running a business. Like, this is what you do. It's just that you can feel this existential, like, clock ticking.
Yeah.
And it's
Walter's like
hard.
A 25-year-old guy.
Yeah.
That's unremarkable. But Walter chafes because he's like, I'm a 50-year-old man.
Yeah.
I have a full-time job. I contributed to a Nobel Prize, which I forgot we get that tip.
Yeah, we did.
A close-up.
Yeah. I totally forgot about that, actually. To me, that was all late-game conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
That they tacked on, not tacked on, but built on to sort of flesh that out.
Kind of reveal later, but it's tipped off there.
And I appreciate, when we do these pilots, we used to do it for autopilot, and now when we're doing these now, I appreciate that attention, because what it tells me is they have much bigger ideas in mind. And they're not just winging it with a pilot and hoping something sticks. And then, they picked it up. Shoot, we better write the rest of this. This feels like Vince Gilligan and his co-writers knew where they wanted to go. I mean, maybe not the ultimate where we're going to go in the final season. And they certainly made changes like the Pinkman one. But it did feel like the minutia of that world and where these characters are going to be, he knew that going in.
Well, one of the things we talked about in Lost is it was one of the first series that was able to get a commitment to end.
Yeah.
To not be forever ongoing. And Vince Gilligan has talked about how one of the reasons your protagonists often end up being a little bit flat in TV dramas is because you can't make them bad.
Right.
You make them bad for an episode, but then you have to bring them back because they always have to be the protagonist, right. And you don't know how long they're going to be in the protagonist. So with this pitch, his pitch was, I'm going to show a protagonist becoming an antagonist. Mm. I'm going to break that rule. And AMC let him break that rule, which meant, I think, he did have a fully formed picture of Walter's arc.
Right.
Not exactly all the stops along the way, but he knew he was dying from cancer, unsatisfied with his life, had contributed to greatness and lost out on it, and had nothing to lose, and was in an environment that would provide him with all the ways to break bad and the motivation to do so. And I think that's what's most impressive about rewatching this pilot, like you say, is seeing that even if they didn't know exactly how they were going to get there, they knew what his story was going to be, and that all the elements were shown. And like I said, you could just watch this episode, if I told you, like, hey, it's a 60-minute short film,
right,
and feel like you got a complete story.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly right. I don't get that feeling with a lot of shows. A lot of shows, I see those pilots or I go back later and see them and go, ooh, they didn't really know what they were going to do here. Like, I don't know if it's a comedy and so it's different, but I don't know if you've seen the Friends pilot lately.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. It's very undecided.
Am I sensing a future episode?
Maybe. I mean, it's so like it feels like they didn't know if this was going to work at all, and the characters are just not who they are. Even by episode two, they're very different.
Well, I don't know if you've listened to Jenny and Matt's Tell It Anyway Cheers rewatch.
Oh, no, I haven't heard it. I keep meaning to because it sounds like a blast.
It's really good. Yeah. And one of the things they talk about is, especially in those first episodes of Cheers, is how they were finding these characters as they went in season one. Mm. You didn't spend a lot of time developing and deepening the characters in sitcoms. You just cranked it out. And you found their wheels as you went. And that's probably with Friends. They're like, okay, we got the funny one and the geeky one. And okay, go. And we'll figure out any depth as we, depth on a sitcom. Yeah. If it comes, it comes. Great.
It's like archetypes first, depth later.
Yeah.
And definitely got that feeling from that. So here's a clip of Hank at the party. Already in good character, I think. This is pretty much Hank in the beginning. There's a weird, on the one hand, Hank wants to be a soldier of sorts, and he's super cocky and he loves his guns and he loves busting crime and he thinks he's got it all figured out, but there's an innocence to Hank that doesn't really get resolved till like season four or where he starts to realize what's going on. And I like that about him. When I first saw it, I really disliked his character. I liked it more last night, so here it is.
Glock 22, that's my daily carry. Okay, I mean, unless you're talking, what, plus P plus loads, you can forget the 9mm, all right? Should I see one of those bounce off a windshield one time?
Yeah, well, you shooting.
When you're going to bring a gun, baby, you got to bring enough gun.
It's when people refer to things as, like, 9mm that makes me just want to throw cake at them. Like, shut up.
What else would you call it?
9mm is what I would say.
No, you don't. You call it, what are you going to call it, a .45? You call it a .45. Come on.
It's like anything. It's like, that's a good point. The .45s, I guess, it makes sense to me. But anytime like these days when somebody will shorten a already short phrase to something shorter, like instead of verses, it's verse, you save one syllable. Come on.
Yeah, in all seriousness, I don't think 9mm is the best example of that for me because I call it a 9mm. Because that's just how I hear everybody refer to it. But I know what you mean, which is they're using lingo, right?
Yeah.
And it's sort of your insider, like me and all my cop buddies, we call it this.
Yeah.
And you don't know what I'm talking about because you're left out, but I'm not going to explain it to you.
And I just feel bad because there's Walter in the other room and he's looking like, a sad guy who turned 50 and doesn't have anything to show for it. At least that's what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. This rewatching made me really feel for his plight in a way that I didn't the first time through. Again, I didn't think I was going to enjoy this. I'll be straight honest about this. Not that I don't think the show's great. I just have never felt like the show would be rewatchable. To me, it felt
too,
like
too hard.
Yeah, too hard. Right. I felt like I'd see it once and go, whew, all right, that's behind me. I feel that way about a lot of shows, actually.
It's like rewatching Schindler's List.
Yeah, like it's an important thing. You should see it, but you don't want to re-see
it. I'm going to make Scott do that for a future episode. Yeah,
that's right. It's on our list. It's on our list, not Schindler's. But the thing I came away with, it happened with Lost, too. I kind of want to watch Breaking Bad again. Like, that's, just the mark of a good TV show. Like, even
it's
though
I've
seen
it. It's
the
mark of a good pilot, for sure.
Yeah, because now I'm like, oh, got to get to episode two. And then I want to get all the way to the freaking acid bath tub thing. And I want to get to the trapped in the basement bit. And I want to get to Tuco and season two and that whole mess. And I want
to just go right into Better Call Saul.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing is I am completely enamored with Better Call Saul. And I think maybe this is a good point to talk about this. Saul, we don't even get Saul till late season two or something. And even then he's a small character. It's no big intention to do much with him. At least according to Vince Gilligan at the time, that would all come much later and he would become a much more important part of this and then get his own show. But watching Odenkirk in that show, I was sure when I went over to that I'd go, all right, let's see if you guys can do this. This is like Flo for Alice or Enos for, the Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah. Like, are you going to screw this up?
Is it Trapper John MD or Aftermath?
Very good.
Spinoffs.
Very good. Is it great? Yeah. Is it Frasier or is it Joey? You know?
Right, right.
So totally. Turns out well, it's Frasier. Well, it's a bad example, but shows. Sure.
But yeah. But yeah.
It's the better. It's so good in its own way, in its own energy. It's a different show. It's like not even it's not even close to being, I shouldn't say it's not even close. There's some tonal similarities, but it's not that, it's kind of on its own. And it's, I think, a work of art that you could pull that off, that you could make a prequel, mind you. I hate prequels almost of any kind, where you bring back characters you know are no longer existing in the modern timeline and still make that work somehow and still make it as compelling as it is. That is a tribute to, I don't know what, some kind of TV making genius. It's incredible. So anyway, I just want to make sure Saul got his love in this episode a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and it is weird to think that, you know, there's 62 episodes of Breaking Bad, and Bob Odenkirk is in 43 of them.
Oh, that's a lot.
And yet is the successor show, so much so the successor show and prequel, which is an even harder task, that you forget that he wasn't that essential to Breaking Bad. In fact, you forget kind of all about Breaking Bad altogether.
Yeah.
Mike Ehrmantraut is only in 28 episodes and is, you know, front and center in Better Call Saul. It does, you know, we talked about the idea of going from protagonist to antagonist, right, was the genius of the Breaking Bad milieu. That could still have been clunky, right? Mm-hmm. And Vince Gilligan makes it work every episode somehow. It really is impressive. And Better Call Saul, I think, shows like, yeah, no, this guy is a cut above. Like he's able to take a prequel minor character. He takes Joey, puts him in a prequel, and makes it work.
Yeah, he somehow did it. I don't know how he did it. It's a great legacy for this quiet natured sounding guy from Tennessee who worked on X-Files, and he's so unassuming, and there's something about that guy I just admire all day long, and I can't wait to see what he even does beyond this. All right, let's take a second to talk about Audible. Audible is a name that has been around so long, I don't remember life without it. And for me, that is a good thing. They're a great place to get audiobooks. Audiobooks are great for helping you be better. Did you know that? To be a better you. For our audience, Audible is offering a free audiobook with a 30-day trial. And if you want to listen to it, Audible has it. Just go to audible.com/currentgeek or text currentgeek to 500-500 on your phone. And browse their unmatched selection of audio content. And download a free title. Start listening. It's that easy. Whether you want to feel healthier, get motivated, or learn something new, Audible's got an audiobook for that. I have had nothing but great experiences with my Audible books. My favorite thing about them right now, this has been going on for a while, but I love how I can have syncing between my Echo devices, my Kindle, and the audiobook from Audible. Oh, man. Talk about taking your book anywhere, anytime, any way you want it. It's amazing. You want to have a little bit of, I don't know, send this book with clips to people or whatever? Well, how about send this book in clips? That's right. Share a book from your library with anyone. And, you know, if it's their first time accepting a book through this feature, they can listen for free. What? Look what you can do for your friends. Or share audio excerpts from your favorite listens with just anyone, really. It's pretty amazing. You got all the speed control you need. I mentioned Whisper Sync for voice. Oh, so good, so good. Anyway, here's what I want you to do. Get a free audiobook on Audible. And here's what you do. You get the 30-day free trial with that also at audible.com/currentgeek. Or you can text currentgeek to 500-500. That's audible.com/currentgeek. Or text currentgeek to 500-500 is the number. How easy is that? You've all got a phone. Do it. Okay, where were we? Jesse. Let's talk about Jesse for a second. Here's a scene where he's talking to Walter, I believe after he came to Jesse's house. But anyway, this gives you an idea of what Aaron Paul's character was like in that first episode.
Look, I don't know what you think you're doing here, Mrs. White. I mean, if you're planning on giving me some bull whiner about getting right with Jesus or turning myself in?
Not really.
High school was a long time ago. Okay, you ain't welcome back, Carter, so step off. No speeches.
Love it. Love it.
The best part about that is he sounds like John Travolta from Welcome Back, Carter, as he's saying those lines.
He does. I hadn't thought of that. Oh, that's weird. Hold on. I want to.
I don't know what you think you're doing here.
It's totally that, dude.
It's okay. Over here. I don't know what you're doing over here.
Why are you going to
I'm not even in Brooklyn. I'm in Albuquerque.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. He's so good. Speaking of Albuquerque, I think that's another one of those, you know, Vince Gilligan is great. He's mm-hmm. incredibly talented, but sure. any big success like this relies on a little bit of luck. And one of the little bits of luck is that they got in on New Mexico's very friendly subsidization.
Mm-hmm.
My wife shot some episodes of a History Channel show in New Mexico under the same program. They were just throwing money at productions. And so what they were originally going to set this in Riverside, California.
Yeah.
Also a great meth town, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And because they were going to get this subsidy to shoot in New Mexico, they decided to set it in New Mexico because they didn't want to have to shoot around the mountains. They're like, everywhere we look, it's going to look like New Mexico. Let's just set it in New Mexico.
I'm so glad.
Which I think I can't imagine this being set in Riverside, California. Now the fact that New Mexico is a character mm-hmm. in this show.
Yeah. It's so happy that whatever, if that was luck, if that was goof, whatever that is, I'm so happy they did that because it became a character in its own right.
Yeah.
It's got this, it's not quite, you know, Mayberry by any stretch, but there's parts of New Mexico that's just a little untouched, especially the desert stuff. It's just beautiful and vista and this and that, and it's a desert and it's gorgeous. And then you've got parts
all of those cartel related scenes. I can't imagine those being so close to LA.
It wouldn't have been the same. You would have been
too tempted to go shoot in LA. There'd be no reason why Walter White wouldn't go to downtown LA for this or that. Would have changed the entire tenor with Albuquerque being the big city.
Yeah.
It just makes the entire thing have a different flavor.
Yeah. It really is a huge sell. If you're telling me we're just sort of outside of LA or in Southern California somewhere, Riverside, whatever, I just go, everything's there. Like, that's where everything is set. And I don't take it as seriously. I expect crime, you know? I mean, just from the stereotype sort of TV perspective. But I don't think about Albuquerque. Never had really before this show much. I'd been through there before, but, you know, whatever. It's a town, Southwest, whatever. I have no way to assign a character to it. But now when I think of Albuquerque or have anything to do with the state of New Mexico, I think of Breaking Bad. That's crazy if you think about it. Because how often do you go, even a show like Chips, which was set in California and is part of the California Highway Patrol, like literally it's in the name. I don't really think about California. I just think about John and Ponch and I think about solving crime and whatever. This was different than that. Like their house had kind of a modest, but this kind of depressing, like 70s aura to it. Like this was built a long time ago and the carpet's ugly and the walls are weird and the pizza on the roof, that roof looks bad. And like, it's just, it's so good. It's so perfect.
And Riverside would have looked the same way. I know, but sure. everything in a desert town, and you guys get this in Utah a little bit too.
Sure.
Everything just looks a little faded,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But sun-baked. If you're in Riverside, you can, you know, drive a little bit down the road, suddenly you're in Tinseltown, and sets it off. In Albuquerque, that's it. That's all you got.
Yeah.
You're faded every direction you look. It's all desert town. There's no respite from that except for, you know, that little bit of downtown Albuquerque.
Yeah. If you're, which
they don't even play into very often.
It's like here, it's if you're in, like you were saying, if I was in Salt Lake City, seems metropolitan enough, but if I drive an hour south and get out of like Provo and all that over there, it's big stretches of zip, and go even further south, you hit like, you know, Red Rock, everything, and St. George and that sort of stuff. Like it, there's something about that that adds to a show like Breaking Bad. There's something about the desolation that's just over there.
Yeah.
You can hide in plain sight in a weird way. Like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but maybe it's the Western lover in me where I love a good Western and I love the idea of, some bad stuff going down in a place where nobody is at the moment. So many of the great scenes of Breaking Bad happen out there. Certainly this pilot episode is not immune to that. It has one of the greatest, most iconic scenes ever with him in his underwear trying to get that Winnebago around.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's an amazing choice. So I'm glad they made it. For whatever reason it was, good on them. I don't know if that's still true of Albuquerque or of New Mexico. I know everyone seems to be filming in Atlanta these days, or in Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know if the New Mexico subsidies are still going or as attractive. But yeah, Atlanta, everything is made in Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia, Vancouver. For a while, actually here in Salt Lake, it was a big deal for a while back in the Touched by an Angel years. Mm-hmm. Every show was being made here because we had these great subsidies. And then that stopped. And movies and TV shows got out of here. So they were here long enough to make Sandlot and, you know, Seventh Heaven and all these dumb things in the late 90s or early 90s, late 80s. And then we were like, nah, we're not giving any more subsidies. And suddenly, you know, Atlanta's like, we'll take everybody. Well,
Better Call Saul is still being filmed in Albuquerque.
Oh, I didn't know that. I wondered if that was the case because it feels like it less needs to, but maybe there's just, we just haven't gotten to a season where they really show off how Albuquerque it is. You know,
yeah, I did a quick search. Where is Better Call Saul shot?
Yeah.
And first link is from IMDb telling where it's shot. But there's also these top 10 Better Call Saul locations you can visit right now.
Well, Brian Ibbett went down and did a tour, the Breaking Bad tour, which isn't much of an anything. But they just drive around a lot of the areas that you see in the show, kind of where the meth lab
apparently
was.
The Omaha Cinnabon is in Albuquerque.
Oh, well, all right then. That makes perfect sense. Kentucky Fried Chicken's first retail location was here in Salt Lake, so.
No, the Omaha Cinnabon is the Cinnabon that Saul is in at the beginning of Better Call Saul.
Oh, well, he shouldn't be there. He should be in some far-flung...
That's just TV magic, right? They're like, well, we're shooting in Albuquerque, and now we have to make it look like Omaha, so guess what? We're shooting Omaha and Albuquerque.
So that mall he's in...
They're inside, though, so it doesn't
really matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But that mall's in Albuquerque, then, that they're in. Okay. Boy, living there is probably a bummer, because you'll see that and go, oh, that's that mall I go to all the time.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what that's like.
Well, all right, then. Before we get too done here... I have another clip to play. Final clip. This is a cool line toward the end of the first meth cook that happened with Jesse and Walter. And here it is.
This is art, Mr. White.
Actually, it's just basic chemistry. But thank you, Jesse. I'm glad it's acceptable.
Yeah, I love that part of his character where there's a professionalism to the actual crime parts.
If there's anything that's present more in this pilot that does get lost, it's his scientific presence.
Mm.
Like he is devoted to the chemistry. And granted, they don't want to get too much into it. They don't want to turn it into a lesson on how to cook meth, but they pay attention. You know, they call it out a lot. You know, don't do this. Be careful with this kind of boiler versus this kind of flask. Erlenmeyer flasks, forget that. That's for amateurs. Or whatever. Like, I love that aspect of it. And it feels like as he becomes Heisenberg, it becomes less about the science for him and more about the power, which makes sense, I guess. But I do sort of miss that aspect of it.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that I did like about the pilot that I'd forgotten. I was like, oh yeah, he really has a love of chemistry. And maybe that's why he breaks bad, is he loses that love. As it's replaced by the need to be in charge, to be powerful.
Right. Well, it goes on to be one of the most coolest, raddest shows in the history of forever. Do you have a... There are a lot of people don't like the episode with the fly in it. They think it's filler. I actually really like the fly episode. It's season 4, I think, or something. I didn't have a problem with it either. But a lot of people think the fly is their worst episode. But is there a character or a scene or a episode of the show where you just like, that is Breaking Bad to a T. This is the show. You know, no one will ever be able to top this moment or this character or this thing. Is there anything like that for you in this?
I don't, you ask so much of me, as far as remembering things.
Yeah.
I will say though, I will answer your question this way. The thing that leaps to mind when you start to ask me, is there a moment? And I don't know if this moment is the best, the worst, the most memorable, the one that that symbolizes the series, I don't know. But the thing that leaps to mind when you say Breaking Bad to me and you're like, think of a moment, it's Fring being blown up.
That's a good one.
We had finally caught up when we get to that episode. We had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
We knew that the chair was wired and we knew he was going to ding, 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 ding. And when Fring just stumbles back and then turns.
Yeah.
We were stunned.
That was something, man.
And so that is the moment that is lodged most in my memory of that entire series.
Yeah. For me, I was going to joke and say it's Badger because I love Badger, but that's not my.
Oh, yeah. We never get Badger in this episode.
No,
huh?
You don't. I don't think you get Skinny Peter Badger for a bit here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think season one you get him, but it's not for till later. But I love those guys. I think for me it was the what's my name stuff.
Yeah.
It's just the moment you went.
Say my name.
There was a moment there where you went, okay, we are in new territory.
That's iconic for sure.
Yeah. And it blew my mind then. It blows my mind now. And I'm weirdly tempted to watch the series again. And then when you say there's only 60 something episodes total, which isn't a lot.
No, 62 hours, you know, that's a weekend.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't pee and sleep a lot.
I've spent more time in Skyrim than I've spent watching Breaking Bad. So, you know, I could fit it in. There's plenty of other stuff I should be watching.
Why choose?
But I'm in the mood now.
Do both.
I'm in the mood to be uncomfortable for 60.
You can watch
episodes.
Breaking Bad and play Skyrim at the same time.
It's a good point, actually. Thank you all for listening. That's our autopilot.
Oh, I got
episode.
One more. I got one please. More before we wrap.
Go ahead.
Did you catch? And I don't know if this is the only time it ever happens, but I'd certainly forgotten it happened at all. Mm. That they mentioned the phrase "Break Bad."
Oh no. Pinkman, I would have captured it. When was it?
Pinkman is asking Walter, like, why are you doing this? Yeah. Like, what is your deal, man? He's like, what? You just turned 50 and decide to break bad or something along those lines.
Wow.
And Walter, you can tell, almost wants to tell someone about the cancer and then backs off of saying it.
Wow.
But I believe it's the only time certainly the only time I remember hearing that phrase. In the series. I may have missed the others. I don't know.
Well, that's fantastic. I had no idea. By the way, I want to make a quick correction. Someone in the chat who lives in Kentucky said, hey, whoa, the first KFC was here in Kentucky. And I made a comment that it was here. He's right. KFC was founded by Colonel Harlan Sanders, an entrepreneur, blah, blah, blah. It says here in Corbin, Kentucky, during the Great Depression, he identified the potential of the restaurant franchising concept and the first Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise.
Ah.
Open in Utah in 1952. So that's the one.
Well, this is like the Illinois, California thing. The first McDonald's is in Los Angeles, in Downey, actually.
Right.
Or was. I don't think it's there anymore. But the first franchised McDonald's that Kroc brought outside of the LA area is in Illinois.
Well, you're just making me want to eat McDonald's, is what you're doing. That's what this is turning into.
Don't do,
don't do it? Oh, come on. It sounds great right now. I'm not gonna
now. I'm gonna go buy some chicken McNuggets as soon as we're done here.
This seems like a good idea. Their strips are actually pretty good. I would recommend those. That's gonna do it for us. By the way, if you want to stick around for the end of the show, we have this great guy that comes in here and does great stuff. Legal Geek, that's what we call him. And this week he discovers a listener question: do age limits on gun sales create age discrimination? If you want to learn more about that, stick around. It's a little segment we play at the end of the show. And as a reminder, if you'd like to support us on our little endeavors here, you can. Patreon.com/currentgeek. That's patreon.com/currentgeek. There's lots of cool stuff over there. We hope to see that grow and then add more bonus material as time goes on. So help us out. And if you already have, thank you guys so much. That really means a lot to both of us that you are. Current Geek on Twitter. Tom's at Ace Detect. I'm at Scott Johnson. Tom, anything else you'd like to promote before we go?
Yeah, I've got the sequel to Pilot X in the works. It's called Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R. And if you'd like to see that get published, I've got a campaign on Inkshares. Just go to inkshares.com and search Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R. If I get 750 pre-orders, just like with Pilot X, Inkshares will publish it, put it in the bookstores, and there will be an audiobook. So I need folks who are interested and want to find out what happens to Pilot X after the first book to go check it out. Inkshares.com. Trigger.
The cover looks awesome. Turned out great.
Oh, that was just me in Adobe Illustrator in 5 minutes. No. That is definitely not the final cover.
You did a fine job. It's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
That's just some stock art and the word trigger, I swear.
Oh, like, I had no idea. I was just like, wow, this is all right. This cover looks really good. Yeah, well done. All right. Well, that's good to know. Also, hey, we do this D&D show on the weekends if you guys want to check it out. It's called There Will Be Dungeons at therewillbedungeons.com. There's some fantastic fun being had there. If you have any interest at all in watching a live D&D campaign play out and get inspired for your own campaigns, well, by gum, we got a deal for you. Check it out. Therewillbedungeons.com with all the details. It's going to do it for us. Currentgeek.com for everything else I haven't mentioned. And email us at currentgeek@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with a normal episode. We'll see you then.
Legal Geek. This week we cover a listener question from Russell, who asks whether the recent trend of several retailers prohibiting gun sales to those under age 21 is age discrimination that could be challenged in court. The recent string of high-profile school shootings in Florida and other states have ramped up pressure for stronger gun control in America. While the government has not yet weighed in at the time of this recording, several retailers like Walmart have decided to take action themselves and ban sales of firearms to persons under the age of 21. While this may be seen as some as a positive PR move for these companies, does it open them up to an age discrimination lawsuit? The topic of age discrimination is most often associated with workplace harassment and discrimination, and the only federal law on point is the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, which prohibits discrimination against those aged 40 or older. To this end, there is not a specific law protecting younger workers from discrimination, at least on the federal level. But regardless, this type of law does not apply in the gun sales context. That leaves several more amorphous constitutional grounds to make a discrimination claim, including under the Second Amendment, under due process, or under the Equal Protection Clause. The Second Amendment is likely not infringed because these retailers are not government entities, and there remain other sources of firearms if a young person wants to own one and exercise their potential rights under this constitutional amendment. Due process and equal protection both stem from the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. For due process, states are generally free to restrict your rights under their broad police powers unless the law infringes upon a fundamental right, which have typically been interpreted to include all those rights enumerated in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Thus, the right to keep and bear arms would likely be a fundamental right that would require states to comply with the strict scrutiny standard to enact limits upon that right, which means the state law must be narrowly tailored to serve a compelling interest of the state. However, again we run into the problem that these retailers are not states or government entities. Even if we ignore that problem with the potential challenge and posit that a state writes a law prohibiting sales of guns to those under age 21, there is a possibility that such a law could still be deemed to meet the strict scrutiny standard. Public safety, particularly of young adults and children, is almost certainly a compelling state interest, and as long as it could be proven that the law would be narrowly tailored to fit those interests, it would stand as constitutional. A challenge could certainly be made in court, but it's a close call on whether it would be successful, and that's only if we have actual government action or laws on this point beyond the retailer context. Equal protection stops laws from discriminating against so-called suspect classes, which is basically people that have been getting a raw deal for years, like minorities and certain religions. Age ranges are not a suspect class, which is also why prohibitions against sales of alcohol to the same age group have not been successfully challenged. Indeed, the alcohol age limit is perhaps the best analog to this question about gun sales, with the only notable difference being that gun ownership may be a fundamental right under the Constitution, while drinking alcohol is not. While that difference could change the legal standard applied in court, it may not change the outcome. The bottom line is, although I am no constitutional civil rights expert, it appears the challenges to retailers not selling guns to those under age 21 would face an uphill battle in court for a number of reasons. Age discrimination is not really recognized for younger people in several contexts, including the sale of alcohol, and that would make it exceedingly difficult to stop these practices and decisions of private party retailers. That being said, this would be a great intersection of gun control and constitutional rights to watch in court if a challenge is ever made, but that seems more likely if states or the federal government write a law like this. We'll have to wait and see if that develops. Thanks, Russell, for the great topic suggestion. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.